Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to January's Small Animal Practice Club webinar. I'm delighted to introduce to you our speaker for today, European and RCVS recognised specialist in veterinary cardiology, Nuala Summerfield. Thank you, Nuala. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much and welcome everybody to today's webinar. The title of today's webinar is Earlier Intervention for a Better Outcome, the latest advances in the treatment of canine preclinical heart disease. Now, the reason behind today's webinar is to update you on some new information that we have from two groundbreaking clinical trials. These trials are called the EPIC and PROTECT trials and have specifically addressed the important question of whether there is any benefit of treating in the preclinical or asymptomatic phase of mitral valve disease and dilated cardiomyopathy before congestive heart failure develops. So in other words, if we treat in the preclinical phase of disease, can we delay the onset of symptoms? And if so, obviously this would represent a major improvement in a dog's quality of life and a clinical benefit. So that's really the background to what we'll be discussing today. And we'll start off with a little bit of background just to make sure everybody's happy and on the same level with mitral valve disease and dilated cardiomyopathy, and then come on to talking about the implications that these trial results have for you as vets in practice dealing with these conditions, you know, on a regular basis. So acquired heart disease in dogs is much more common than congenital heart disease, and there are relatively few types of acquired heart disease that we treat in dogs, and most of these will show breed and age predispositions, which makes their diagnosis more straightforward. As a rule of thumb, when we think of small breed dogs, they're typically affected with myxomatous mitral valve disease, which we'll shorten to MVD for this presentation as it's quite a mouthful. And then large breed and giant dogs, these are more affected with dilated cardiomyopathy or DCM. Now, we do see some large breed dogs with mitral valve disease and occasionally some small breed dogs with dilated cardiomyopathy, but those are relatively uncommon occurrences, and most of the time these sort of breed and size predispositions hold true, so they're important to remember. So mitral valve disease, or MVD, is the most common form of canine acquired heart disease and accounts for more than 70% of cases. It's a primary valvular disease associated with aging. It's increased frequency in males and mainly affects small breeds, so less than 15 kilos. Typically affected breeds or predisposed breeds will be the Cavalier, King Charles, Chihuahua, Dachshund, Maltese, Bichon, those Yorkshire Terrier, those types of dogs, but also we see it in small and toy breeds that are mixed breeds as well. As I said, some large breeds can be affected with primary mitral valve disease, and one of the breeds that we see this in is the German Shepherd. And on ultrasound or echocardiography, what's interesting with the German Shepherd is that the mitral valve appears to have less myxomatous thickening compared to the smaller dogs that are affected with the condition. And interestingly, the systolic function of the ventricle deteriorates much faster associated with the mitral valve leakage and secondary volume overload compared to the small breeds. Dilated cardiomyopathy is the second most common acquired heart disease in dogs. This is different from mitral valve disease, which, as we said, was a valvular problem. The heart muscle is healthy until it becomes fatigued from volume overload from an increasingly large leak across the mitral valve. But in dilated cardiomyopathy, this is a primary heart muscle disease. The valves are usually okay. It's a heart muscle condition. It's increased risk with increasing age. Males and females seem to be equally affected, but sex may affect progression. So, for example, in the Doberman, there seem to be echo changes earlier than in the female. So the male Dobermans get echo changes earlier than females, but females tend to get more ventricular arrhythmias earlier than the males. It's mainly associated, as we said, with large and giant breeds and typically pure breeds. We don't see that many mixed breeds with dilated cardiomyopathy. And specifically predisposed breeds, which we'll talk about more in detail, will be the Doberman, the Irish Wolfhound, Great Dane, Newfoundland. Interestingly, the Cocker Spaniel, I've put that in brackets because that's obviously not a giant or large breed dog, but they are one of the smaller breeds that we do see with dilated cardiomyopathy. Now, breed not only affects which type of disease they'll get, but it also can have an effect on the rate of progression. And certainly for mitral valve disease, the Cavalier is one of the most highly predisposed breeds, and we actually see this disease developing in relatively young dogs compared, for example, to some of the other smaller and toy breeds, which may develop this disease more in sort of middle to old age. Some of these Cavaliers are getting myxomatous changes of their valves, you know, at 2 or 3 years old. So they do tend to have earlier and more rapid progression. So definitely something to be monitoring when you have Cavaliers coming in for vaccinations, wellness checks, even when they're still relatively young adults. With dilated cardiomyopathy, the Doberman is a breed that does get very aggressive form of the disease, and the actual rate of progression is faster in this breed and also breeds like the Great Dane compared to other affected breeds. So for example, the Cocker Spaniel gets quite a slowly progressive insidious form of DCM, which can actually go on for many years. Same with the Newfoundland, they tend to be much more slowly progressive. Now, with both mitral valve disease and dilated cardiomyopathy, there are two distinct stages. So we have the asymptomatic or preclinical stage, and this is the important stage that we'll be referring back to throughout the rest of this presentation. But this preclinical stage, which can last for a number of years, is obviously often difficult to know when it really started, because it would be that point from where the heart was normal, or for all intents and purposes looked normal, to where it starts to become abnormal. And often we don't pick up that very subtle stage. When we pick it up, it'll already have progressed somewhat, even if the animals are still asymptomatic. Now, for dilated cardiomyopathy, picking up this asymptomatic or preclinical stage can be quite challenging on physical examination, because they may, as we'll talk about later, have a totally normal physical exam. So often we're relying on our index of suspicion based on breed, age, etc. Mitral valve disease, thankfully, is a lot more straightforward to pick up, because, as makes sense, if it's a valvular disease, we're going to have a leak developing across the mitral valve, and that will be associated with a murmur, which will start off as a very soft left apical murmur associated with a small leak developing across the mitral valve, and that leak will get louder over time. The murmur will get louder over time as the leak increases in size. And then we have the symptomatic stage of the disease, which is comparatively short compared to the asymptomatic or preclinical stage, which lasts for a longer period. So the shorter symptomatic stage obviously is associated with a poor prognosis once symptoms start to develop, and these typical first symptoms are going to be congestive heart failure in most breeds. And as you know, some dogs do better with congestive heart failure medications than others, even with all, you know, the best congestive heart failure therapies. Some dogs just really never stabilize properly and don't do particularly well, and often dilated cardiomyopathy in some of the more aggressive forms, such as in the Doberman, they can have quite a poor outcome once they're in congestive heart failure. It's also important to mention that sudden cardiac death, presumably from ventricular tachyarrhythmias, so ventricular tachycardia that then degenerates into ventricular fibrillation, causes sudden death in the preclinical phase. So this is in the phase before the symptoms of congestive heart failure have developed. And this can happen in up to 25 to even sort of 30% of Dobermans can have sudden death before congestive heart failure. And then once Dobermans go into congestive heart failure, so once they're in the symptomatic stage, probably another 25 to 30% of those will have sudden cardiac death. So that will be how they die, rather than protracted congestive heart failure. So the Dobermans are a particularly arrhythmogenic breed, and that's something to be aware of. So I think this image sums up really clearly what we're trying to emphasize here is that symptoms of congestive heart failure are just the tip of the iceberg. This is just the bit above the water. And what we really need to focus on is what can we do if we detect the disease in that phase where it's developing. So the vast amount of the iceberg is below the water, and this is where we want to see if we can have an impact. So in both mitral valve disease and dilated cardiomyopathy, progression of compensated heart disease to congestive heart failure happens, as we said, over a number of years. And the key question that we have to answer for our patients with mitral valve disease or DCM is where are they along that time course of progression when we detect disease? And this emphasizes the importance of disease staging. So not just saying they've got DCM, they've got mitral valve disease, but actually where are they along that time course of progression? And it's particularly important to be able to identify that time course of progression and stage them when we think about the new information we have for the benefit of early treatment. Now, there have been a number of schemes that can be used for staging heart disease, but one of the best and most applicable ones is the ACVIM Consensus Statement Guidelines for the Diagnosis and Treatment of Mitral Valve Disease. And this was published in the Journal of Veterinary Internal Medicine in 2009. And it proposes a staging scheme that's really quite easy to follow and very applicable for dogs. But this is for mitral valve disease. They have not done a staging protocol for dilated cardiomyopathy, although I think we can clearly see that there is some applicability of this to dilated cardiomyopathy, but just so that you know, this is specifically for mitral valve disease. So we have stage A, which are the at-risk dogs. These are predisposed breeds with a family history. No MIRM or anything, just if you're born a Cavalier, you're already stage A because we know that you're highly likely to get this condition at some point over the course of your lifetime. Stage B1 will be asymptomatic dogs with no heart enlargement. So they'll have a small leak. You might hear a grade 1 or 2 murmur over the left apex, consistent with a small mitral leak. But actually, on ultrasound or radiographs, there'll be no evidence of heart enlargement. So there's no remodeling yet occurring in response to that small volume overload. Stage B2, these dogs are still asymptomatic, so owners would consider them essentially normal. But the murmur will be a little bit louder. You'll probably hear at least a grade 3 murmur. That will be associated with a moderate size leak, and the heart will now have started to remodel. So in response to the volume overload, the heart chambers are enlarging, and you'll be able to pick up heart enlargement on radiographs and echo. Stage C1, these are dogs who've now gone into congestive heart failure. So we've got C1, which is the acute congestive heart failure, typically needing to be hospitalized for oxygen and intravenous diuretics. And then stage C2, which is the majority of cases, they're at home being managed on daily cardiac medications. And then D1 and D2, these refer to these refractory end stage cases. So these are cases that have been had multiple episodes of congestive heart failure. They might be becoming a bit cachectic or developing ascites as well as part of the sort of ongoing congestive process where the right side is starting to fail too. And we have D1, which are the ones needing hospitalizing, and D2, the ones that are managed at home, typically with very motivated owners giving multiple medications a day, triple diuretic therapy, etc. Okay, so we're just to emphasize that again, so stage A, these are the dogs at risk. This is very much breed related. Stage B1, these are the dogs that have the presence of a leak. So you'll hear a murmur, you'll see a leak on echo, but the heart is normal size on radiographs and on echo. Stage B2, this is the important stage that we now can do something about. Prior to the EPIC trial being released last year, we really couldn't do anything prior to the onset of congestive heart failure. No trials had shown any statistically significant improvement by using drugs prior to the onset of congestive heart failure and mitral valve disease up until the EPIC trial. So this is the stage we're really interested in, and this is the stage where the heart is big, but there is no congestive heart failure. So these dogs will still have no clinical signs, no rapid respiratory rate, no coughing. And if we look at the echo image, this is what you would typically see. So we've got some left atrial enlargement, we've got some left ventricular enlargement, and I would just point out to those of you who are not familiar with echo, this is the left atrium. So this is a right parasternal long axis view, left atrium, left ventricle. You can see the interventricular septum and the free wall moving, and this is the mitral valve. And every time the mitral valve closes, when the ventricle contracts, we have this jet, this green jet of mitral regurgitation going back into the left atrium. Okay, so stage C1, as we said, will be the hospitalized congestive heart failure cases. We can clearly see congestive heart failure there on the radiographs. And stage C2 would be the home managed congestive heart failure. So we've managed to resolve the majority of the pulmonary edema, and the lungs are relatively clear. The dog's doing pretty well at home, their respiratory rate and effort ration reassessments and renal blood works to check electrolytes and renal values. And then the stage D, as we said, these are the refractory cases that may have developed biventricular heart failure. So now maybe they've got some ascites, which you can see on the radiograph, and pulmonary edema. And you can see that little dog there. He's obviously a bit ascitic as well as having left-sided congestive heart failure. And as we said, although those guidelines were not developed for mitral valve disease, we can see by thinking sort of laterally how those are applicable to dilated cardiomyopathy. So the stage of dilated cardiomyopathy that we're interested in picking up are going to be these dogs that are equivalent to stage B2 mitral valve disease. So that means that they have got clear evidence of heart enlargement because of the fact it's a muscle disease, rather than having a valvular leak, which some will have, but that's typically only because the valve is stretched by the enlarging heart, not because they've got primary problems with the valve. So these dogs, because it's a primary muscle problem, will have systolic dysfunction. So their hearts will not be contracting forcefully. That's a feature of the heart muscle disease. They may have arrhythmias. Again, we said that's breed dependent. So often in the preclinical phase or asymptomatic phase of the disease, ventricular premature complexes are detected relatively frequently in Dobermans. You may pick up atrial fibrillation in the preclinical phase of breeds such as the Irish Wolfhound, but they must not have congestive heart failure yet. So that's a feature of being at this sort of equivalent of stage B2 for dilated cardiomyopathy. And as I said, this is the stage we want to identify because this is a stage we know now that we can do something about with treatment. So the emphasis now is on early diagnosis. And we know that by screening these dogs, so looking for the disease, not waiting for these dogs to come to us with symptoms of the disease, but actually screening, actively looking for mitral valve disease and dilated cardiomyopathy in dogs that we know to be at risk, we can not only confirm the diagnosis, stage where the disease is before clinical signs of congestive heart failure develop, but the key question that we have been asking ourselves, which we now have an answer to, is if we find this disease, we used to say, well, what can we actually do about it? It's all very well telling owners, your dog has mitral valve disease or dilated cardiomyopathy, but I haven't got a treatment to offer you. We now have a treatment to offer them. So this is why it's key to find the disease in this stage, because now we can start treatment. And we know from this published evidence that we can make a significant improvement to their length of life and quality of life. So the rationale behind these two studies, just to explain a little bit about that. So as we said, the preclinical period in mitral valve disease and dilated cardiomyopathy is much longer than the actual symptomatic phase of the disease. So the evident part of the disease, where they've got coughing, breathing difficulties, exercise intolerance, so that visible bit of the iceberg above the water is pretty short in comparison with what's going on silently for a number of years beforehand. And so it was it was realized that if a treatment could be found that was effective in prolonging that preclinical period where the dog had no symptoms, so that's, you know, ideally the bit of the disease that you want to prolong because that's when their quality of life will be better, then we could have a major impact on the longevity and quality of life of these patients. We also knew that a number of therapies are effective in the stage C phase of the disease, so congestive heart failure. So we know that once a dog with mitral valve disease or dilated cardiomyopathy actually develops congestive heart failure, there are a number of therapies, so ACE inhibitors and diuretics and pimobendan, that will make a big difference to these dogs. We also knew that the drug pimobendan, which had the ability to improve survival and maintain quality of life in congestive heart failure, had in a number of studies been shown to decrease heart size. That was one of the other observations. And that's probably because this drug increases contractility, but also decreases afterload. So it makes it easier for the heart to pump blood forward into the circulation. And so there was quite a lot of interest in looking at the drug pimobendan and saying, well, rather than waiting until the dog's in heart failure, what about if it was started in the preclinical phase of the disease? Could this also have beneficial effects? And that's what the PROTECT and EPIC studies were designed to do. So if we start with the EPIC study, this was published last year. And the title of the study was The Effect of Pimobendan in Dogs with Preclinical Myxomatous Mitral Valve Disease and Cardiomegaly. And this was a randomized clinical trial. So it enrolled a very large number of dogs globally, a lot of investigators all over the world. And what they found in this study was that by giving pimobendan to dogs with mitral valve disease and evidence of the heart being enlarged on echo and radiograph, so these are B2 dogs, resulted in prolongation of that preclinical or asymptomatic period by approximately 15 months. Now, we knew from other studies that the average phase where the dog had no symptoms, so that B2 stage, typically would last for just over 2 years without therapy. So now if we can add an additional year or a bit longer than a year, you know, that's a significant improvement in terms of the amount of time that that dog will remain symptom-free. The PROTECT study was published several years ago in 2012, but it at the time, because it was focused on the Doberman and it was the first study at the time looking at using drugs in this preclinical stage, the interesting thing now is with the results of EPIC, and we put those together with PROTECT, and there's another ongoing study which I'll come to called the SHIELD study, we now are generating much more sort of accumulation of evidence that strengthens all of these results individually. So the PROTECT study, the title of this was The Efficacy of Pimobendan in the Prevention of Congestive Heart Failure or Sudden Death in Doberman Pinschers with Preclinical Dilated Cardiomyopathy. And the reason that this study just focused on Dobermans was because they have a very well characterized form of disease. It's rapidly progressive, so you know that over a certain period of time you'll be able to follow them for a sufficient amount of their disease. And obviously it can be quite difficult to compare dogs who have very slowly progressive disease and perhaps get atrial fibrillation to dogs that have a rapidly progressing disease and have ventricular arrhythmias, and it can make assessing the results more tricky. So it was felt that it was best to focus on one breed initially for this study. And the results showed that administration of pimobendan to Dobermans with echo evidence of heart enlargement consistent with preclinical dilated cardiomyopathy gave these dogs a prolongation of the preclinical phase by approximately 9 months. So again, a really significant prolongation of that symptom-free stage for dogs that have a rapidly progressing form of dilated cardiomyopathy. Now, on average, but again, we're looking at lots of different breeds here, the preclinical phase of DCM is typically lasts for a couple of years without therapy, and potentially shorter than that for many Dobermans. So giving them an extra 9 months of asymptomatic life before they're in congestive heart failure, and we know how badly they do with congestive heart failure, this specific breed. You know, again, this is a big clinical improvement for these dogs. So as a result of the PROTECT study, many of you will probably know that Vetmedin is now licensed. So Vetmedin is the form of pimobendan that we that was looked at in these trials. Vetmedin is now licensed for the treatment of DCM in the preclinical stage in Dobermans following echo diagnosis. So they have to follow the license, they have to have an echo to prove that the heart is, you know, sufficiently enlarged. Just because you're a Doberman, you don't put the dog on pimobendan, you do need to actually demonstrate there's heart enlargement there. As a result of the EPIC study, an application has been made by the drug company for a new license indication for the treatment of preclinical mitral valve disease. But this license, obviously it takes time to get the license, and as far as I understand, it's expected at the end of 2017. So it's important to be aware that even if you are recommending the use of pimobendan in stage B2 mitral valve disease dogs at this time, you must inform the owners that this is currently still off license use. Pimobendan is, or Vetmedin is, licensed for congestive heart failure treatment for mitral valve disease and DCM, preclinical DCM therapy in Dobermans, and in mitral valve disease dogs, it will most likely have a license for preclinical use at the end of the year, but currently it does not yet have the license. That doesn't mean we shouldn't use it, but you must inform owners and be aware of that fact that it's off license use. Now, an important question after the PROTECT results were published was, how applicable are the PROTECT results to other breeds with preclinical dilated cardiomyopathy? As we said, you know, this was looking at the Doberman because it's a very well characterized form of disease, almost like the worst form of dilated cardiomyopathy that we see. Interestingly, there does appear to be applicability to other breeds, because since the PROTECT study was published, there was another study that looked at the benefit of using pimobendan in preclinical DCM in the Irish Wolfhound, and also showed a benefit. So that's another breed that benefits. And then there's an ongoing study that for you to be aware of called the SHIELD study. This is a retrospective study, so it's sort of data mining, going through retrospective data. Because if we were to do a prospective trial to look at other breeds, you know, it could be multiple years before you'd get the results. So this is a retrospective trial. Hopefully we'll have the results in, I would hope, next year, 2018. And this is looking at exactly that question. Does pimobendan have similar beneficial effects in other breeds of dogs apart from the wolfhound and the Doberman with preclinical dilated cardiomyopathy? I think we have, as cardiologists, we have the feeling that probably there is some benefit there, but obviously it would be nice to have the scientific proof to show, you know, that that is the case. So an important question is, how does EPIC and PROTECT impact our management of vets, you know, as vets, of mitral valve disease and DCM cases that we see in our practice? Well, obviously this is the first prospective. These are the first prospective blinded studies in veterinary cardiology to show a convincing benefit of starting therapy in the preclinical stages, and also the first cardiology studies to demonstrate that if we screen a population and find the disease, that we can now actually do something about that, so we can start early intervention, which will have a benefit. And so again, this emphasizes the importance of cardiac screening, going out there and looking for the disease, even if the animal is asymptomatic, because we can actually make a clinical impact now. And so screening is defined as a strategy that's used in a population to identify the possible presence of an as yet undiagnosed disease in individuals without signs or symptoms. Now, if we think about how that relates to our patients, if we think of preclinical mitral valve disease screening, this is relatively straightforward because we can screen for this disease with a stethoscope. That's all we need to do. You know, it's a relatively straightforward diagnosis. As long as you pick your your patients based on your index of suspicion. So you're looking for middle-aged to older small breed dogs. As we said, there are certain predisposed breeds. And they will have a typical heart murmur of mitral regurgitation. So it'll be left apical, which is over the mitral valve, systolic. If you're not sure if a murmur is systolic or diastolic, feel the pulses at the same time as listening to the murmur. And if it's systolic, the two will be synchronous. But to be fair, in small animals, the vast, vast majority of murmurs you will hear will always be systolic. That's different in large animal cardiology, but in small animal cardiology, it's uncommon to rare to hear diastolic murmurs. The loudness of the murmur, as we said, gives an approximate indication as to the size of the mitral valve leak. Typically, B2 dogs, so stage B2, so they've got some heart enlargement, although they're still asymptomatic, will have a murmur grade that's moderate, so a grade 3 out of 6 or louder. Now, screening for DCM is a bit more challenging, as we said, and the physical examination can be normal in many of these dogs. About 50% of dogs with dilated cardiomyopathy will have a heart murmur. And the reason for this is because, as we said before, this is not a primary valve problem. If the valve is leaking, it's typically not because the valve is thickened and myxomatous. It's because as the heart stretches, the annulus is pulled apart and therefore the valve can't close properly. So you start to get a small leak up the middle or through the middle of the valve. It's typically a soft murmur, so a grade 1 to 3 out of 6. And you may detect an arrhythmia. Again, this, as we said, is quite dependent on breed, a gallop sound, which is a third heart sound associated with poor diastolic function, or an irregular pulse. So always feel the pulse when you're listening to the heart, because it can help you know if there's a if they're synchronous, or perhaps if you're having pulse deficits associated with arrhythmias, premature complexes. Even if the physical examination is normal, if you are screening for dilated cardiomyopathy, and for example, you have a Doberman that walks into the clinic, you cannot say that that dog does not have dilated cardiomyopathy just based on your physical examination. If the index of suspicion remains high, you'll need to do further screening tests. So what would increase the index of suspicion for dilated cardiomyopathy? Well, we know that it's an acquired adult onset disease. So it's recommended to screen dogs for dilated cardiomyopathy if they're older than 3 years old. Younger than 3 makes the likelihood of detecting DCM much less likely. It's a disease that affects large and giant breeds, so those weigh more than 20 kilos, so we're not going to screen a 10 kilo dog for DCM. Any breed can be affected by DCM, but as we said, there are certain at-risk breeds. So again, if you've got a Doberman, a Wolfhound, a Great Dane coming into the clinic, those are highly predisposed breeds, and those would certainly be ones that you would want to screen. And a known family history, so if you know that a sibling had DCM or if a breeder tells you they had it in their line, then that would be a reason to screen. Now, the gold standard screening method for dilated cardiomyopathy is echocardiography. As we said, we can screen for mitral valve disease with a stethoscope because if you've got a leaky valve, you're going to hear a murmur. But unfortunately, because it's a heart muscle condition, the actual dilation, as the heart starts to dilate and become weaker in terms of its contractility, that doesn't generate any sound that we would necessarily hear with a stethoscope. So that's why to definitively diagnose and to screen for DCM, ideally we would be doing echo in these animals. But echo is also the gold standard for confirming and staging heart disease, whether it be DCM or mitral valve disease. So screening is one thing. Screening tells us, yes, I think we could have that disease present, but then we want to confirm and stage it to say whether we're at B1 or B2, or maybe just verging on to C in terms of mitral valve disease, we would need to do an echo then as well. So really echo is our gold standard way to screen and diagnose these conditions. It also allows us to rule out other acquired and congenital heart diseases, because sometimes we hear a murmur, we think it might be mitral valve disease, perhaps it's something else. It allows us, as we said, to measure all the heart chamber sizes. And if you have a breed where you can't find any published reference ranges in terms of what's normal for that specific breed, when you're doing a cardiography, you can always reference the heart chamber size to body weight. That will give you a rough idea as to whether it's normal or not. So if a dog has dilated cardiomyopathy but is examined with echo during that sort of gradual evolution between being totally normal on echo and then being clearly abnormal on echo, clearly there's going to be a point in time where the results aren't totally normal, but perhaps they're not abnormal enough that you feel confident calling this dog a clear-cut preclinical DCM. And to deal with this difficulty of equivocal results, the European Society of Veterinary Cardiology set up a DCM task force, and they published a scoring system to help vets who are doing echo to diagnose and, I suppose, be a bit more confident in their diagnosis of DCM with echo. Now, this scoring system is actually about to be updated because it was published over 10 years ago. But the idea behind this is that if a dog has a score on this scoring system, and this scoring system looks at a number of different echo variables, then that should prompt serial evaluation. So perhaps every year you're going to be recommending a repeat echo. Because if the dog is genuinely developing DCM, that score will increase over time. It's a progressive disease, so even if at year one it was very borderline or equivocal, by year two, whether you wait a year or perhaps, you know, you might want to see the dog a little sooner depending on the breed, but if it's definitely developing the disease, that score will increase over time. It'll become much more obvious over time that there's clearly some abnormality there. So just to look at that echo image again, so if we do an echo in a dog that has mitral valve disease, these are the kind of features we're looking for to stage a dog at B2. So as we said, we want to demonstrate left atrial dilation and left ventricular enlargement. We want to see a thickened mitral valve, which helps to confirm that this is a myxomatous or age-related mitral valve problem, and we can see a leak of mitral regurgitation. We can see that the heart is contracting or trying to contract relatively well, so the systolic function is maintained. So this is clearly not a dilated cardiomyopathy case. This is an M mode, which looks at it's a way that we assess. It gives us a rough idea as to how well the heart is, or the systolic function of the heart. So how well the heart muscle fibers are shortening when the heart contracts. And this allows us to measure something called a fractional shortening, which is a rough guide to how well the heart is contracting. And we expect this to be normal in the sort of B2 stages of the disease. So the contractility or systolic function should be maintained at this point. We're also expecting in a B2 dog, so this is the dogs that have the cardiac enlargement or the remodeling of the heart in response to a reasonably sized leak, they're going to start to have some left atrial enlargement because there's all this blood going back into the left atrium. And so in a normal, or in a dog with a normal sized heart, then this would be a normal aortic, this is the aorta here, so this is an aortic diameter. This is a normal left atrial to aortic ratio. So here's the left atrium, this tear-shaped structure here. And typically, the diameter of the left atrium shouldn't be any more than sort of 1.4, 1.5 times the width of the aorta. So this would give you a normal left atrial to aortic ratio. This dog here has stage B2 mitral valve disease. Here's the aorta in the middle, and we can see this is the left atrium. This is significantly enlarged, and that would fit with the fact that the dog was starting to get remodeling from the large leak. Now, with dilated cardiomyopathy, obviously we're looking for different things on echo. We expect to see the evidence of systolic dysfunction. So here's the heart muscle here, and if you compare this to how well the mitral valve dog's muscle was contracted, you can see that the actual change in the chamber size of the left ventricle between systole and diastole, it doesn't really change very much. So there's very weak contraction of that heart muscle. The valve does not look thick, the mitral valve, and there's some left atrial enlargement there, but typically it's not to the same degree as we see in mitral valve disease dogs because they don't have that big extra volume coming back into the left atrium because they typically don't have a large mitral leak. And then if we look at the short axis view of a dog with preclinical dilated cardiomyopathy, again, it just emphasizes how poorly this heart muscle is contracting. We've got quite a round globoid left ventricle here. This is the blood in the chamber of the left ventricle, and the right heart is, you just see it as a crescent shape along the top. But what we're looking for here is this change in size of the left ventricular chamber, which is pretty minimal when the heart contracts. Now, amazingly, even though the contractility looks pretty poor, or the systolic function looks poor in this dog, if this is a preclinical dog, this dog would not have symptoms that the owner would be aware of. These dogs cope remarkably well with this disease, and this is why when they go into heart failure, some of them really can go sort of crashing and burning into heart failure because the reserve of the heart is quite poor by that stage. And that's why if we can get them in the earlier stage and start treatment and keep them symptom-free, that makes a lot of sense. And this would be an M mode for a dog with dilated cardiomyopathy. Again, comparing it to the mitral valve disease case, if we look at the heart muscle here, it's pretty poor contractility or systolic function of the septum and the free wall, and enlarged chamber sizes is diastole and systole here. Now, screening every at-risk dog for dilated cardiomyopathy with echo is impractical because there will always be some owners that have cost constraints. There may be issues in terms of the local availability of echo equipment and expertise. So there are several other screening tests that are useful to consider in an animal which where you can't do echo. To screen for DCM. And as we said, we're sort of focusing here on the DCM cases because we can screen for mitral valve disease with a stethoscope. It's the DCM cases that we might, if we find something abnormal on the physical exam, then that's very helpful. But if we have a normal physical exam but still an index of suspicion that's relatively high and we can't do echo, then we need to have other things that we can do to at least increase our index of suspicion sufficiently to perhaps persuade the owner to go ahead with the echo. So these are some other things that we can consider. And by doing these additional screening tests, they do, as we said, help to sort of raise that index of suspicion to the point where we can make sure that the most appropriate dogs receive echo examinations for definitive diagnosis. And we're not sending dogs that for echo, which is a relatively expensive test, that perhaps don't have a high index of suspicion. So these are almost like you could see them sort of pre-screening, pre-echo screening tools. So chest radiographs are definitely a useful tool to look for heart enlargement in a dog that we suspect to have preclinical DCM, or if we want to confirm, so we have a dog that we've picked up a murmur of mitral valve disease on physical exam with our stethoscope. We want to know now, do we think this dog actually has heart enlargement, and therefore we might be thinking about early treatment if the dog meets the EPIC criteria. But with the EPIC study, the dog had to have, as we said, evidence of heart enlargement. And so we need, once we've picked up the mitral valve murmur, we need now to document that the heart is big before it would meet the criteria to warrant therapy with pimobendan. So we might decide, if we don't have access to echo, to do a chest radiograph as the next step to look for evidence of heart enlargement in that dog that we think has mitral valve disease. Now, on thoracic radiographs, when we measure the vertebral heart score, greater than 10.5 roughly is considered abnormal. Diagnosis of cardiomegaly on thoracic radiographs is straightforward if the heart's pretty big. But where we can have difficulty is when the heart might be only minimally enlarged, or where we've got the sort of breed chest conformation issues that can make the heart look bigger. If they're sort of small barrel chested breeds, sometimes the heart can look bigger than it really is. Sometimes these very deep chested dogs, the heart may have to be pretty enlarged before you'll really notice that on the thoracic radiograph. So it isn't straightforward always unless the heart's already significantly enlarged. So as we said, there are various confounding or confounders that can make it difficult to diagnose minimal or borderline heart enlargement for at-risk dogs, whether that be for DCM or mitral valve disease. And the other thing just to mention about radiographs is they don't give us any information about the heart muscle function, which is a hallmark of DCM, or what the mitral valve looks like clearly, because that's one of the things we use to definitively diagnose mitral valve disease. Really, for these, we need an echo. And these radiographs here just sort of highlight the difficulty. So the one on the right, clearly, if you take a thoracic radiograph and the heart's that big, it's got that sort of globoid appearance. There aren't any obvious angles, so I don't see a really big left atrium. Sometimes with mitral valve disease, you see a disproportionately enlarged left atrium here. This heart just looks quite round. And if we got a radiograph through like this, you'd be quite happy to say, yes, there's definitely cardiac enlargement there. If we had suspicions this dog might have preclinical DCM, we can see that the height of the heart is more than two-thirds of the height of the chest. Certainly the width is wider than we would expect. There's no evidence of congestive heart failure, so this would fit with that preclinical stage, probably later on in that preclinical stage. Now, I included this radiograph as this is where we can run into problems. This dog is a very deep chested dog, as you can see from the angulation of the trachea away from the spine. And the heart doesn't look grossly enlarged there, but on echo, this dog had some evidence of early DCM. So there was some systolic dysfunction and mild left ventricular chamber dilation. So clearly this dog is earlier in the time course of progression of preclinical DCM compared to this dog, but just on an echo alone, on a radiograph alone, this is really to demonstrate the difficulty that we can sometimes have. Now, with mitral valve disease, as we said, we've already screened with our stethoscope. So now when we do the radiographs, we're not screening to see if there's a murmur there. We know that. What we're doing is to see, is there heart enlargement? And, you know, if we get radiographs through like this, clearly we can see there's no congestive heart failure. So that would fit with this being a preclinical dog. There's no evidence of congestive failure here. But we've got this large left atrium sort of tenting here. And clearly we've got some cardiomegaly. So this would fit with a dog who's definitely in the B2 stage. The heart is tall and wide, and we can see here it's wider than two-thirds of the width of the chest. So we'd have no problem saying, yes, this dog fits the B2 stage, would fit the EPIC criteria. This dog could have off-license pimobendan at this point and would benefit from that. Other screening tools, so ECG is important to think about for certain breeds. Now, if you have a Cavalier with a mitral valve murmur, you typically won't gain a lot in terms of sort of screening or definitive diagnosis with an ECG unless you specifically hear an arrhythmia. Yes, you can sometimes pick up cardiac enlargement from the QRS width, and the R-wave height can give you a clue about left ventricular enlargement, but it's very unreliable, and when we do see it, typically the heart's already pretty big. So I don't think that's a particularly useful tool in these mitral valve diseases, but where it can be very useful is if we have dogs that we know get breed-specific arrhythmias with their DCM. So, for example, for the Doberman and the Great Dane, they get ventricular arrhythmias. Now, if you have a dog who doesn't have a murmur, they're maybe coming in for a vaccination, an 8 or 9 year old Doberman, you know they're at risk for developing DCM. We think that, you know, a high proportion of Dobermans will develop DCM in their, over the course of their lifetime, maybe up to sort of 50%. So it's really a disease that this breed are very predisposed to. So if you have this dog coming in, you don't hear a murmur, but you think you might hear an irregular or an occasionally irregular heartbeat, maybe a missed beat or a missed pulse, definitely run an ECG on that dog. And if you found intermittent VPCs, that would definitely be an indication to screen that dog for underlying DCM. Same with atrial fibrillation in some of these wolfhounds. If the dog is not in congestive heart failure, they can have atrial fibrillation, which is, remember, it's quite a chaotic rhythm when it's fast. But when they don't have congestive heart failure and they're in the preclinical stage of DCM, their atrial fibrillation can be quite slow. So it may not be that different in rate from a normal sinus rate. But if you listen for long enough, you'll pick up that it isn't a slightly odd sinus arrhythmia, it really is an irregular rhythm. A lot of these things get, or a lot of these slow atrial fibrillations in preclinical DCM in wolfhounds get missed and put down as sinus arrhythmias because people don't listen for long enough. Listen for long enough. If it does not sound like a really classic sinus arrhythmia, run an ECG because you may well pick up slow atrial fibrillation in some of these giant breeds, and that's thought to be associated with dilated cardiomyopathy. Most vet practices will have an ECG machine. If you're not comfortable using it or interpreting the trace, obviously there are a number of telemedicine services which will look at the ECG for you. Holter monitoring is becoming increasingly commonplace, so I'm sure that most of you have heard of this, and some of you may already have used this in your practice. It's a 24-hour ECG basically, and it's a little monitor that you attach to the dog, and it gives you an idea over a much longer period than a 5-minute clinic ECG in terms of what the true frequency and severity of these cardiac arrhythmias are. It's the preferred screening tool for breeds such as the Doberman, which is prone to sudden cardiac death, so life-threatening ventricular arrhythmias, because you may not pick up anything in the clinic, but perhaps over a 24-hour period, you'd be surprised how many you might pick up. Now, to buy a unit for your practice, they're expensive, and the interpretation of the data is not straightforward. It requires quite a lot of training and expertise, but there are a number of companies now that will loan out Holter units with instructions of how to connect them, and then they'll interpret the results for you and give you recommendations. So this makes Holter as a screening tool for preclinical DCM in appropriate breeds that get arrhythmias much more accessible to vets in general practice. And so we said, just to emphasize the importance of arrhythmias, it's really something that's more associated with DCM than mitral valve disease in the preclinical phase. So be thinking of atrial fibrillation in breeds such as the wolfhound with preclinical disease and the ventricular arrhythmias in the Dobermans and the Great Danes. And the Great Danes are being recognized now as also suffering from sudden cardiac death and getting some quite nasty ventricular arrhythmias. And 25 to 30% of Dobermans with preclinical DCM, or occult is another term you may hear people referring to preclinical or asymptomatic DCM. 25 to 30% of these will have a sudden death episode before they ever go into congestive heart failure. And the interesting thing with the PROTECT study was that the benefit of pimobendan not only delayed the onset of congestive heart failure, but that benefit also delayed the sudden death risk as well. So it wasn't just that they went into heart failure later, it was an overall benefit for dogs, either congestive heart failure or sudden death. Just to make sure that you're familiar with diagnosing atrial fibrillation, as we said, it's an irregular rhythm. So you have this undulating baseline with no clear P waves, these F waves, these little tiny waves here. These are narrow complex QRSs here. So it's a supraventricular rhythm. The F waves are the fibrillation waves in the atria that then intermittently conduct through the AV node and cause a ventricular contraction through the normal ventricular conduction pathways. So it's not a wide and bizarre QRS, it's a narrow QRS, but the distance between the R waves, so the R to R interval, tends to be very irregular. And when this is fast, you'll probably hear people refer to it as listening to like tennis shoes in the dryer. It's really chaotic. But as I said, when it's slow, it can almost sound like a sinus arrhythmia. So just be aware of that. So characteristics, irregular rhythm, fibrillation waves, no P waves. Ventricular premature complex is probably a bit more easy to diagnose. They're these wide, bizarre looking complexes. Because they're premature, if you look at the distance between the preceding normal QRS, this is a P QRS, that's a little T wave there, the distance between the normal sinus complex to the VPC is short compared to the typical sinus to sinus interval. That's because it's a premature complex. And if you have just single premature complexes like this, although we wouldn't start treatment, if you saw that on a clinic ECG in a Great Dane or a Doberman, you definitely want to screen that dog for underlying DCM. We occasionally see them also associated with systemic disease. So if the dog was systemically unwell, then certainly we see them in situations like splenic tumour, hemoabdomen, if the dog had, you know, quite a marked infection somewhere. All those things can cause VPCs, but in a clinically well dog where you're seeing VPCs and the breed fits, you know that they get breed-associated arrhythmias with preclinical DCM, definitely don't ignore that. And again, with the VPC, because it's coming from the ventricle, there's no P wave in front of it. Now, if you have VPCs strung together, then this is what we call ventricular tachycardia. So here's a normal sinus complex here. And then we've had, this is coming from a different focus in the ventricle, hence it's negative, whereas the previous ones are positive. But here we've got one VPC, and then it's followed immediately by others. And when it's this close, that you almost get this sawtooth pattern here, we call this R on T phenomenon. And this is actually really concerning, because this is what we think is happening on these Doberman's Holter monitors, where they go into rapid ventricular tachycardia, and it's then so fast that it degenerates into fibrillation, and then basically there's no output from the heart, and the dog dies. Because if you imagine you've got contractions happening this fast, there's really no time for the heart to fill and empty again. So the cardiac output associated with this kind of period of rapid VTAC is virtually nothing. And you would be surprised what you can see on Holter monitors of some of these apparently asymptomatic Dobermans with preclinical DCM. It's quite scary how complex these ventricular arrhythmias can be. So runs of VPCs together we call ventricular tachycardia. You can see slightly slower rate here. This is not R on T, but this very rapid here is R on T, and intermittent sinus complexes. This obviously we would consider antiarrhythmic treatment, even in the preclinical phase of the disease. If the dog had no symptoms, if we see that type of complex arrhythmia, we would start an antiarrhythmic therapy. Holter monitoring, as I said, relatively easy to put on. You'll get the instructions, but the monitor looks like this. It's pretty small. It's smaller, I would think, than they're smaller than iPhones, really. They're very lightweight. And you attach them to the dog using, you shave and then put these little stickers to attach the electrodes to. And then they can be all sort of bound up on a harness, and then we bandage over the top to keep it in place. But most dogs tolerate it really well, and you would typically send the dog home with the owner. The owner obviously keeping a close eye to make sure the dog doesn't go swimming or chew the monitor. But you want the dog to exercise normally and to have a sort of normal daily routine. They keep a diary, and then you can see if there are any trigger events or you know, what, when these arrhythmias, if they're happening, are most frequent. Finally, in terms of screening tests, when we think of laboratory tests, these are probably yet less useful. Hematology in the preclinical stage is going to be normal, as it typically is in the symptomatic stage of heart failure. Biochemistry in the preclinical stage, typically normal. These really don't give you any information. In the symptomatic stage, biochemistry obviously is important. Even if it's normal, we typically run biochemistries relatively regularly to assess renal function and electrolytes. Biomarkers may have some potential use as screening tools, but really this is breed specific. Most of the work has been done looking at this in Dobermans, and so in Dobermans they have a place, but we don't have the information to use them as screening tools for preclinical mitral valve disease or really for DCM in other breeds. So in terms of biomarkers, these are not standalone tests to replace echo, a plus or minus Holter. They can be useful additional tests or sort of pre-screening tests in breeds like the Doberman. NT-proBNP is secreted by the ventricle in response to increased myocardial wall stretch. So the idea is as the heart stretches that this is released. And CTNI, which is cardiac troponin, is a subunit of the troponin complex, again released in response to acute or chronic heart muscle injury. But not that widely applicable unless you're a Doberman. If you are a Doberman, one way that they've been suggested for use is if you have a client who's got cost constraints that would prevent them having annual screening with an echo and Holter, then you could consider biomarkers, so doing cardiac troponin and NT-proBNP annually. And then if you started picking up abnormalities, then there's sort of more strength of conviction to say, okay, well, I think the costs associated with an echo and a Holter are really warranted in this dog because we now have a high index of suspicion. Typically, for screening, when we have people bringing their dogs in for DCM screening, it has to be annually because even if you say to an owner, I've screened your 5-year-old Great Dane. That'd be quite an old Great Dane, but let's say we're screening a 2-year-old or 3-year-old Great Dane just because they live so short, such a short period of time, or maybe a 4 or 5-year-old Doberman. We don't find any evidence of anything now. That is not a sort of a clean bill of health for life. This is a disease that can be developed at any point in their lifetime, so screening needs to be done annually. And obviously, once you've detected the disease, then you would be checking probably more frequently in terms of staging and looking for when they get to the point where the heart is sufficiently big to meet the criteria for starting treatment in the preclinical phase. So, really, the take-home messages here are that increased awareness of at-risk dogs is really important because it helps to ensure early detection of preclinical mitral valve disease and dilated cardiomyopathy. Screening is important to detect affected dogs. Auscultation with stethoscope is sufficient with mitral valve disease, but for dilated cardiomyopathy dogs, we often need to do ultrasound and potentially even Holter to look for arrhythmias. Definitive diagnosis and staging has to be done with echo to ensure that the dogs meet the PROTECT and EPIC criteria because both of those studies require the dog to have cardiomegaly, as we said, to be equivalent of B2 stage dogs. And therapy with pimobendan is indicated if dogs meet the EPIC and PROTECT criteria due to the proven clinical benefit in terms of increased longevity and quality of life. But again, important to remember that although PROTECT does now have a license for preclinical use in Dobermans, it does not for other breeds, and it does not have a license yet for the use in preclinical mitral valve disease. That does not mean we shouldn't be using it if we feel the indication is there, but we must make sure that the dog meets the criteria of having sufficient heart enlargement, that we've confirmed that they have mitral valve disease or dilated cardiomyopathy, and that we've informed the owners that this is off-license use. Although hopefully, depending on the results of the SHIELD study, we may have that evidence in the not too distant future to say that it definitely does benefit other breeds with dilated cardiomyopathy, and I expect that based on the EPIC trial, that VetMedim will have a license for preclinical mitral valve use before too long. So I'm very happy to answer any questions that you may have, and thank you very much for your attention. So I've got one question that's come through here, and it's a general question about mitral valve disease, and just asking, is it or how often do we see that the tricuspid valve is also affected with this condition? Well, I suppose the technically correct term is AV valve disease or atrioventricular valve disease, because you're right that often this disease does not specifically just affect the mitral valve. We tend to term it mitral valve disease because in the vast majority of cases, it's the mitral valve that is most affected. But if you look with echo, you will very frequently see a leak through the tricuspid valve as well, and thickening of the tricuspid valve. But it's very rare that we see cases where the tricuspid valve is the predominantly affected valve. I think I've seen that a couple of times, but it's really not common. So that's why often you'll hear about mitral valve disease, but often these dogs will have some tricuspid involvement too. And I've got one other question here, which asks, in a German Shepherd dog, could you apply the results of the EPIC study, even though it's a large breed with mitral valve disease? Well, I think that's an interesting question. As we said, it would currently be off license use, and if you read the EPIC criteria, the dogs that were enrolled in EPIC were smaller dogs, so they weren't of the sort of largest size, because the German Shepherd is an unusual breed in that they're a large breed dog, but they get mitral valve disease. But I think yes, I think you could, because this dog has mitral valve disease, therefore it's going to have a volume overload associated with the mitral leakage. But we also know that they seem to get problems with their systolic function, so the ability of the ventricular muscle to contract and push the blood out into the circulation. So they almost fall under the results of both the EPIC study and the PROTECT study. So although the PROTECT study, we can't definitely say that those results can be applied to breeds other than the Doberman, the German Shepherd gets systolic dysfunction like a dilated cardiomyopathy dog. So I think as long as that discussion was had with the owner and it was understood that this was off license use, yes, I think that that would be an applicable case. If you had a German Shepherd with mitral valve disease who had cardiomegaly and systolic dysfunction but hadn't gone into congestive heart failure yet, I think that would be an applicable case to consider using pimobendan in the preclinical phase. Okay, so if there are no other questions, thank you again for your attention.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Nuala for an excellent presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.